Hey folks, you love us, and I hope you love Amazon. I'm a customer. Well, here's a great way to shop at Amazon while supporting Wolfpot. Instead of going directly to Amazon, go to wolfpot.com/Amazon. That'll take you to the same Amazon you know and love, and all the prices will be the same as they always are, but we'll get a sweet, sweet kickback, and that helps everybody. You, me, Baron, everybody here. Give it a try. wolfpot.com/Amazon, and we thank you.
Boop, boop, boo, doot, doot, doo. Boop, boop, boo-doot, doot, doot, doo. Hey, it's me, Baron Vaughn. I just did all of that theme song with mouth music. I know, that's how good I am. I trained at the School of Michael Winslow. Hi, welcome to Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn. I'm Baron Vaughn, and again with us today, we have, from across the pond, the amazing Jesse Malton. How you doing, Jesse?
Oh, I'm spectacular. I am in Liverpool now.
Ooh, Liverpool.
So I've moved from Bristol to Liverpool. Manchester is still home, so big ups to my Manchester friends.
Yes, I saw somebody tweeted that you mentioned. They could not believe that you knew what Manchester.
That I said Manchester.
Well, we're talking about Manchester again, sir.
Exactly, Manchester. Yes, and I was in Blackpool this morning, so I'm just going wild.
Just from pools, from the pool of black to the pool of liver.
Pretty much, that's what's happened. That is what is going on in my life. Just covering this here globe. Now, just so that you all, you lovely people, you all understand, I promise you, my dad has not flown away a la Dave Chappelle to an island we've never heard of.
Oh, that's more Amelia Earhart than Dave Chappelle.
Well, he did disappear, though.
Okay.
I'm just saying. Use whatever.
And by that, you mean your father. Your father could just disappear.
Yeah. He's got skills. Basically, though, yes, he is. We're very, very thankful he is getting better. But it is unfortunately a very slow process, the getting better. And my mom is a star as always and has been taking really good care of him. And so I'm very hopeful that next week you will have him back. Not that I don't enjoy being here with all of you, but definitely the big LM is... He will make his grand return.
Just to make sure, listeners, if you're not cool with Jesse Malton, you're not cool with Leonard Malton. Everyone knows.
Well, I will say it's true. He's a little bit biased, or as he likes, he always says, nepotism begins at home.
Nepotism begins at home. That's a very
one of his favorites.
Leonard Malton joke. Very, very. Yeah. A dad joke, but just a little more erudite.
You know what? That is Leonard Malton. Leonard Malton is a dad joke, but more erudite.
That should go on his business card, and we will make those cards for him and make it a present.
Daddy, I got you this card. I don't want tough luck. So,
yes,
here we are again.
What are we talking about today, Jesse?
We are going to talk about asbestos in the wall. No, we today are going to talk about actors who you see all the time in major motion pictures, blockbusters even, whose names you don't know, but you really should.
Right.
Because they are fantastic just deserve a bit more recognition.
We're calling this episode The Great Unknowns. Bum, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun. Exactly.
The thing is that you, our listeners, clearly you're movie people. You're movie buffs. You see a lot of movies. You think about movies. You talk about movies. And as Jesse once said in the podcast, you have ended relationships and friendships over movies. We're a very intense group of people. So I don't doubt that you, our listeners, know these actors well because you pay attention, but most people do not. And my litmus test is, does your mom know who that is? If your mom doesn't know who that is, you know who we're talking about. Someone that you see, you talk about, you're like, Mom, he was in this and he was in that. He was in that. Oh, maybe I'm just projecting because my mom.
I feel like we just started a therapy session.
Yeah, not necessarily a therapy session, just confessional time, just confession time. Just that, you know, my mom loves movies and I love my mom and I take her to see a lot of movies and we talk about movies a lot. And usually I'm back in Las Vegas, my hometown. You know, we go see a movie. We just, over July 4th weekend, we went to see Inside Out. Highly recommend it, everyone. I highly recommend it. But there are voice actors in that movie that my mom doesn't know who they are. I know who Amy Poehler is. I know who Mindy Kaling is. I know who Louis Black is, Bill Hader. My mom does not. So those are all comedic actors, of course. But here we're talking about actors that fit that category. But they do a lot of major work. Because Jesse and I couldn't figure it out. She figured it out, and I was like, huh? What you talk about? What you mean? Who?
And he said it just like that, which is why we love him.
Yeah, over the email at that.
What you talking about?
Over that. I'm talking about Shaft. Now.
Can you dig it?
I can dig it. Now, excuse me while I get my Isaac Hayes on, but let's start with, we both thought of two actors that are very known now. But not known at the same time.
Yes.
Jesse, you begin.
I will begin. Well, there is a fellow by the name of Mark Ruffalo. I have not just a small crush, but a rather large one on him.
Well then.
I have proclaimed my love to him in person. and he very politely backed away. No, he was very nice. He gave me a hug and he said, thank you. And then my dad got me out of the room before I did anything illegal. So that was good. But he's one of those actors that just, it everything he does, even if the movie isn't good. This is usually a conversation we all have at home in the Malton Manor. We talk about how you watch something and it's like you almost want to say out loud, it's not your fault.
Yes.
It isn't you. It's not you that makes this terrible. It's everyone else.
And I assume you mean the movie Now You See Me.
How dare it? Yes, actually, yes, that's true. And several other films I've seen him in that are not so great. But he is always fantastic. Well, he who has been in you know, films that have been nominated for, I mean, he was in The Kids Are All Right, you know, so Oscar nominated films, and he just churns out performance after performance, and he's brilliant. He really, really is. But up until very recently, when he became the Hulk, people did not know who he was. But now that he is the Hulk, and, you know, those that type of motion picture is ever so popular. People who probably have never seen any of the little indies that he's done know who he is. And, you know, I'm happy to have him be known, because I always hope that just means more work. It means I get to see him do more things.
Oh, yeah. And exactly. My mom did not know who he was until he was in The Avengers, but then realized that she has seen him over and over and over and over and over again for years.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the thing is that, you know, now that we all have our smartphones, it's one of those things where we now, because we all have our smartphones, and a perfect example today, my boyfriend and I coming down on the train from Blackpool to Liverpool, you know, I'll bring up an actor's name and he'll go, who's that? And my boyfriend's a big film buff and he knows his stuff. But I'll say some name to him. And now, because of these smartphones, I open up my IMDb app and I say this guy, and he goes, oh yeah, that guy. And that's sort of what we're all able to do now. So like you're saying with your mom, being able to go, no, Mom, you've seen him in this, you've seen her in that. Now we actually have a little computer in our hands that allows us to hold up a picture of said person and go, this guy.
Exactamunders, which is valuable, but also makes it kind of drop out of people's heads faster. But those things happen. Speaking of keeping things in your heads, especially about these kinds of actors, what was the movie that you saw that put Mark Ruffalo in your brain, in your periphery?
Oh, wow. Well, Baron, you've thrown me a curveball.
Oh, okay. Should I answer it then?
Yeah, you go. You go ahead. I'm gonna think about it for a minute.
You Can Count on Me is the movie.
He's fantastic in that. Yeah.
Now, this movie was done by a man named Kenneth Lonergan, who is a writer and a director. He came out of the theater, and Mark Ruffalo came out of the theater as well. He had a very influential and popular play called This Is Our Youth, which had a revival on Broadway, I think, last year, or it's still on Broadway right now. But yeah. Mark Ruffalo was in the original cast of that play. And once Kenneth Lonergan graduated into doing movies, of course, his good friend, longtime collaborator, Mark Ruffalo, was going to be in his movies. And it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It also stars Laura Linney, who is on our list as well. You guys are like, what? Who? What? Laura Linney? But she's in. But does your mom know who she is?
I think we're just going to change the name of this episode to Does Baron's Mom Know Who This Person Is?
Who Baron's Mom Knows?
Well, you know what? I'm looking through, it's actually 13 going on 30 is the first time that I really fell for him.
Okay.
And the reason being that when I watched that film, I've always been drawn to the nerdier, I can't imagine why, not like it was just crammed into my head that those were the only people I could speak to. But I remember watching that movie and not getting why some people didn't think he was just gorgeous. Like, oh, he just kind of plays a nerd. No, he's wonderful. So I think that was probably the first time that I really thought I like you. And then the Brothers Bloom after that, and then sort of just everything he's done since. Anytime I see that he's in something, I'm happy about it because I know that I'm going to get an interesting performance and I know that I'm going to enjoy watching him.
I just want to remind our listeners that Jesse's on Skype. And so the extra second layer to this podcast today is that you all get the real time of experience of feeling like you're on a spotty Skype connection with Jesse Malton, where it starts to go out and you're like, can I hit it? If I hit it, will it work? But it's not going to work. Jesse's in England. So we're making our
Listen
way through
technology.
It.
Technology, stop being rude.
I believe 50 Cent said it best when he said, hey, yo, technology. I don't know. It was getting technology's attention more than reprimanding it. Anyway, guys, let's move on.
The next person on the list.
Yes, the next person that I wanted to speak about is David Oyelowo. Now, a lot of you know who he is because, you pay attention. And, of course, he was just in the smash hit Selma, nominated for an Oscar. Although David did not get nominated and Ava DuVernay did not get nominated, I have already talked about this. And I just want to reiterate what Leonard said about there being 8 Oscar nominees for Best Picture is it always means that people are not going to get nominated for directors. There's always going to be people who are left out of being nominated for Best Director, which is exactly what happened.
My dad always says, in regards to the Oscars, when you look at the list, there are times when you look at the list and think, well, so-and-so really shouldn't be there. And then there are other times, and I think this year was one of them, where the question is, who would you take out?
Huh.
You know, if you only have this many, who do you think you would remove from this situation? You know, if you when you only have 5. And I think that is unfortunately what happened with David Oyelowo. I think that it was one of those, you know, probably came down to him and one other, and unfortunately he didn't get nominated. But
yes, now and then of course I get into debates with people because Chiwetel Ejiofor, who actually does belong on this list as well, because
Chiwetel Ejiofor is the greatest man on earth. Go on.
I don't know if he's the greatest man on earth, but I personally did not care for his performance in 12 Years a Slave. and he got nominated over David Oyelowo, who did not get nominated in the first people, and people don't understand this. This is the first major motion picture featuring the character of Martin Luther King Jr. It doesn't happen. That often. Actually, now that I think of it, like Nelson Ellis was him in like Lee Daniels, the butler, for like 5 seconds. But the thing is, there hasn't been a movie about Martin Luther King Jr. in a big major motion picture studio. And this was it. And this man played it. And even though I was like, he's British. My God, he's British. He brought so much soul and truth to the character of Martin Luther King Jr. that I was like looking at some of these nominees being like, that person over David, okay. But look, he's been around for a really long time and he's still not a household name. Because I was saying to Jesse before we hit record, the name that most people are mentioning when they think of Selma is Ava DuVernay, which is a valid name to think of. She directed that movie. The movie could not have been without her. It went through three directors before she came and she had a vision and she created one of the best movies of 2014. And David, who played Martin Luther King Jr., when Lee Daniels was attached to it, he said no to David because David's British. But then Ava came into the project and she said yes to David. They'd worked together on some stuff in the past. But I'm getting off track. I first started paying attention to him. Well, actually, I saw him in a play in New York a long time ago. I'd heard about him. I was like, oh, you guys see this guy, David. I was like, okay. So I went to go see Agamemnon. Guys, I'm fancy.
And Agamemnon.
Get your Greek theater on. And David was in it, and he was fantastic. And then it wasn't until Rise of the Planet of the Apes that I started seeing him in film more and more and more. I'm like, oh, he's doing movies? And I looked him up, and he'd been doing things. I'm like, what? How have I missed him until this point? Maybe because he had his real accent in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. But obviously, this man works his butt off. I mean, let me just list off a couple of his credits from recent years. Interstellar, Selma, A Most Violent Year, Nightingale, which is an HBO film that is out right now. Lee Daniels, The Butler, which Leonard and I talked about. Jack Reacher, Lincoln, The Paperboy, which Leonard and I talked about, which is an experiment in itself. But the guy's been working. He's been on his grind, and he will win an Oscar sooner than later.
Yes. And you know what was really interesting was reading about Nightingale with him. I did watch Nightingale. Just being completely honest, didn't think it was very good.
Oh.
I was not alone in having that opinion and that reaction to it. But it's one of those things where it is just him. The film is just him. And so even though I didn't care for it as a film, I thought he was incredible. And that is what everyone seemed to take away from it, was that they didn't love it. I think it probably would have made a much better, I often think that it would have made a much better short. I think in general, people should just be doing more shorts because frankly, a lot of these stories do not need to be fleshed out to an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Oh, I think that's part of the industry problem because it's really, you pitch an idea, it's like a 30 second, do you get it? But then people are taking an idea that really is only 30 seconds long and then turning it into a 2.5 hour behemoth of a film. But anyway, you were saying.
And that's the thing is it's unfortunate because it means that you take something that might have been neat and really interesting and you kind of the wind goes out of its sails because when you're 45 minutes in, you're going, okay, I got it now.
Right.
Okay. I got it now. But again, he is just incredible. And when reading about what he felt, why he wanted to do this is he said, this is different to anything that I've done. And if I'm going to do something and fail, I want it to be something that really tests me and tries me. So he knew that this may not be the greatest of films, but he wanted a challenge. And that just shows you the kind of person that he is, because he doesn't want to do what's easy.
Yeah.
He wants to do what actually challenges him.
I mean, the man is a real actor, is all I can say. And
100%.
Yeah. And he, I love that that's what he said about it, because that's the thing about movies is you can experiment. It's just that everyone's going to see it.
It's true.
Everyone is going to see what you thought was a rehearsal. It's going out on TV. It's going out into the theaters. And a lot of the time, and I bring this up to people all the time, when you see these interviews with actors and they're talking about the movie they just made, most of the time they have not seen it.
Yeah.
They're talking about their experience working with the actors they worked with, the writers they worked with, and the directors they worked with, and the producers. But they don't know how it looks yet until the premiere a lot of the time. And a lot of actors miss their premieres or never watch their own movies.
Yep.
Because they just can't take it. They're like, I did it. I don't want to see what it looks like.
Yep.
So they can just talk about their personal experience inside of it. But a lot of the times, mofos don't know. Mofos don't know. Let's put that on a t-shirt. Anyway, who's next, Jesse?
Well, John Leguizamo.
Yes, Johnny Legs.
Johnny Legs. Oh, God. Yeah, Johnny Legs. What a guy. The thing about him, he's another one where as soon as I see that he's in something, actually, really, him and also Clifton Collins Jr.
Mm.
And not just because they're both Hispanic actors, but because they tend to play similar roles in that they have the ability to take a part that can be small and create depth. And, you know, as opposed to, again, because they're both Hispanic actors, you know, early on it was, you know, gangbang number one, gangbanger number two. You know, they were able to really flesh out characters no matter how big or small and just blow people away.
Well, you know, it's they I'm not going to say that they have a similar look because they don't have a similar look, but they, yeah, I think that that's a good way to put it, is that they could take something small and make it big. And I feel like John Leguizamo has definitely gotten cast in things where they don't exactly know what to do with the role. And they're like, should we make it bigger, make it smaller? You know what? We should cast John Leguizamo. Perfect. That's what we should do. And he'll do something interesting. Yeah, he'll write it for us. He'll improvise. And then we're going to have to pay him extra for that. Shh, don't tell him. But John Leguizamo came out of the theater. You know, and again, this is a man who I believe is a real actor. And if you're unfamiliar with John Leguizamo's solo work as a solo performance artist in the theater, check it out. Check out Mambo Mouth. You know, check out Freak. Check out all that stuff. It's incredible. Actually, I think that they did Freak as a HBO film a couple years ago, and that's how I first saw it, because it was incredible. So seeing him in his element where he's jumping from character to character and telling all these stories from his childhood and from the world that he grew up in New York, he can just, he's like a stand-up, you know. And a lot of people think he's a stand-up, but he's not a stand-up. He has done stand-up, and he'll do things in a stand-up venue, but he's a performance artist, and he brings that interesting way of looking at life and his depth and his way of putting, like, I mean, even a movie like Spawn, which if you're unfamiliar with the movie Spawn, watch it. I am not saying it's good, but I'm saying watch it. It has John Leguizamo is in it as a demonic clown. And that's all I need to say. It is a very strange movie. I think it was made a little earlier than it should have been made. And I've been hearing for years that they're going to remake it. But it's a hard film. It's a comic book character who, it's very, very dark. And I don't think that we had the technology to really pull it off when they tried to pull it off. But John Leguizamo is a bright light in that movie and makes this very insane, very scary, very strange character work.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's again, that's the thing. Certain actors, I always bring up the term it, because it is something that they've spoken about since back in the day. We're looking for someone who has it. Mm. And the conversations that I often have at home about these different sorts of people is whatever it is, they have.
Mm.
You know, you'll look at certain people and go, all right, this it thing, that person has that. And I cannot look away, and I cannot wait to see what else they do. And I also, now, lovely audience, that you have heard me a little bit, this will not be much of a shock, but I love the movie To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's wonderful. Anytime I get to see Wesley Snipes in drag, and by any time I mean only in this movie, I'm happy. But John Leguizamo in this film, he's not just good, he's fantastic. And talk about, I mean, something where you have to have guts to say, yes, I'm going to play a drag queen. I'm an actor who is, you know, a big part of who he is the machismo and all of that. And I'm now going to play this hilarious sort, and she's meant to be trashy, and she's from New York, and you know, and she goes through men, this and that. I mean, it's just, and she, I'm saying she, he's incredible. He's absolutely incredible. And I always, you know, just as I will applaud David Oyelowo for Nightingale and Taking a Risk, it is frankly the same risk. I'm not comparing them, but I mean, it's the same risk to look at something, to look at a part like that and say, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to try it. And I, you know, it could be terrible and people could hate me and people can mock me, but I'm going to do it because I want to do it.
All right. And
he did it. And damn, do I love him for it.
John Leguizamo, everybody. Just a couple of credits real quick. Moulin Rouge, okay, played Toulouse-Lautrec. Also, he was in Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. I think that's the first place that they worked together. But yeah, so check out John Leguizamo. I'd say start with To Wong Fu and work your way from there. I think that we need to take a little breaky-poo, and we'll come back with more actors and actresses. It's a gender-neutral term, mofos, after this. Now, on Thursdays, from the founders of the ultimate industry screenwriting staple, The Blacklist, comes The Blacklist Table Reads, an exciting new podcast that takes the best screenplays Hollywood hasn't made yet and turns them into movies for your ears. Every month, The Blacklist Table Reads will be turning one script into four weekly episodes, complete with writer interviews from Blacklist founder Franklin Leonard, a fusion of classic radio theater with the most talked about scripts in Hollywood. Seriously, a truly unique listening experience. Their first script is the outrageously satirical comedy Balls Out by Malcolm Spellman, currently a producer on Empire, and Tim Talbot, winner of the 2015 Waldo Salt Screenwriting Award at Sundance, with the cast featuring Paul Scheer, Matt Walsh, Lauren Lapkus, Casey Wilson, and more. Ooh, and more is in that? I love and more. The Blacklist Table Reads, Thursdays on Wolf Pop. We're back. That's me doing a Jimmy Fallon character from Saturday Night Live. And we're back.
Sir, you are out of control.
I am not OOC, but I'm just a little bit OC. D, but you were saying, Jesse?
Ah, you're special.
And I know
what I was saying. Welcome back to Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn. You have the wrong Malton today, but I promise we will get you the right Malton soon.
Well, Jesse, if loving you means being wrong, I don't want to be right.
I'm going to save that and make it my ringtone. So as we've been speaking about these different actors that are just incredibly talented folks who you know when you see them, and you know that when you see they're in something, they're going to be good regardless of what the film is. They are going to be incredible. Uh-huh. And you cannot talk about something like this without bringing up Laura Linney, because Laura Linney is just phenomenal. And I don't say that lightly. I will have to say, I do know her. It's bad. The very short version of this is that she came to a film festival, the Telluride Film Festival that I've been going to since birth. And, everyone just fell in love with her because she could not be kinder or warmer. So you're going to be crazy talented, and then you're also going to be one of the loveliest human beings I've ever encountered. Now you're just showing off. And she ended up marrying someone who has worked the festival since forever and a day. So, we've gotten to, because of that, spend a lot of time with her, a lot of time with her, her bouncing baby boy. They have a little boy. He's just turned 2, I believe. And he's gorgeous. He's absolutely gorgeous. Right. Sorry, I was having a moment and loving that moment.
Well, but you're talking about Laura Linney as a generous, kind person who lights up a room, which is exactly what I see in all of her work.
Yep. Yep. She really, again, she's one of those people where you can give her anything and she can do it. And not just do it beautifully.
Yeah.
And find the nuances of a character and just bring you, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Can you think of a movie that, was the first movie that comes to mind when you think of Laura Linney? Is Definitive Linney. Definny.
Definny. Well, you know what? The thing is, at this point, really, the big C, and that's not obvious, that's not the first time I saw her, but the big C is like, it's just, if you want to watch someone, I feel like acting classes should show that TV show.
Okay.
And just say, do you see what this woman can do? Try to do that.
Be Laura Linney.
She's incredible. But I saw her in The Squid and the Whale, Kinsey, Mystic River, The Truman Show. The Truman Show is definitely one where she stands out to me because it was one of those character within a character.
Yes, definitely.
And so that was really, really interesting to me.
And she's really funny in it. That's the first time I saw her. The Truman Show was a very special movie for me because I was a Jim Carrey fan when I was a kid. Of course. I loved Jim Carrey. I loved how big he was. And everyone, when you're a person like that, as I was as a kid, a quote unquote spaz, people think that you can't be serious. People think that you are constantly on. Everybody always asks, are you always on? I'm like, no, because there is no on. There's no on, there's no off. This is just who I am. So when Jim Carrey did The Truman Show, it made me feel like, oh, this man can act. This man can do drama. He can be taken seriously. And it's the same pattern that I assume Robin Williams went through, that people didn't want to take him seriously. And then when he showed that he could actually act, people were like, oh, we are all wrong. We're all wrong. And who steps into that screen but Laura Linney, who is so funny and so good in that movie, and just the way that she would – I feel like I remember even the preview of it, the trailer for Truman Show, that she is – there's some scene where Truman, played by Jim Carrey, already kind of understands that he's being watched. And then when Laura Linney's character comes in, who's playing his TV wife, but she's really his wife as well since he doesn't know he's in a show. And then she does this product placement in the middle of their conversation. It's just so perfect and so seamless. And she's just trying her best in that character to just keep everything exactly as it was. Why don't you try this new Makoko drink? And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? And that's when I started paying attention to Laura Linney. And then, of course, she showed up in You Can Count on Me, which is a movie I love. And then I got to kind of sit with this woman more. And, of course, we spoke last podcast about Philip Seymour Hoffman in a movie called Savages. And the other half of that movie is Laura Linney, who put a baseball bat in her hands for she's going to knock it out of the park kind of performance. Was that really verbose?
No, not at all. No, again, I have to say that I know her because I will go on and on and on about just how much I adore her. No, in terms of range, The Nanny Diaries, where she plays this incredibly cold, and it's meant to be a kid's movie, just incredibly cold, difficult woman that you're not meant to feel anything for. So you've got that. And then on the other side, you have her in something again, like Kinsey or Truman Show, she just has such a way about her. And
then in Mystic River, she could be scary.
Yeah. But that's it, is that she can do absolutely anything. There's just whatever you put in front of her, she can do it. And she's been nominated because she's been on Broadway. So on top of that, she's been nominated for Tonys. She's just an incredible lady. And if you don't know her, then your life is a sadder place for it.
And you probably do know her. But does your mom?
But does Baron's mom?
Does Baron's mom know who she is? She will. So speaking of another great unknown, or just another powerhouse woman who delivers so many performances, Kathy Baker. And this is somebody that Jesse really wanted to get on this list.
Yes.
Talk about Kathy Baker.
Well, so again, there are those actresses and actors who manage to, in the tiny, whether she is playing someone's mom and she's on screen for all of 5 seconds, whether she is playing a nosy neighbor, a la Edward Scissorhands, she is another one where whatever you hand her, she takes it, runs with it, and is incredible. And she's done so many different things. So as I say, she's an Edward Scissorhands, and the character she plays tries to seduce Edward Scissorhands. I mean, she just, and then you go from that to Inventing the Abbots, where she plays a mother who is just trying to get her family through, keep them afloat. And then she's in films like The Cider House Rules, Cold Mountain, Saving Mr. Banks recently, and then just now at The Age of Adeline. She's another one, as I say, where if you see her picture, you'll go, oh, okay, I know her. But if you really watch her performances, to me, she's a bit like Julianne Moore.
Mm.
In the sense that she has a way, she has a face that when she is happy, she melts your heart. And when she is sad, she breaks it.
Hmm. Okay.
And that's really, and that's the same thing that I find them to share that very much. Just the ability to bring you into whatever it is. And just, yeah, have a real effect on you.
Now, some of you may remember a TV show called Picket Fences. And this was a show that Kathy Baker was a big part of. She actually won an Emmy when she was on that show. You also might remember her from Cider House Rules. Edward Scissorhands, which Jesse just talked about. And that's the other thing is that Edward Scissorhands is a perfect movie because it's like when I describe actors like the ones that we're talking about, I always try to think of a very specific scene that everyone has seen that will be a perfect example of who that person is. And in Edward Scissorhands, in Edward Scissorhands's, as Jesse said, she's the neighbor. And if that doesn't do it for you, she's the one that gets the first haircut from Edward Scissorhands, where she is essentially having an orgasmic experience while he's cutting her hair. And if you can think of that person, that's Kathy Baker.
If you taking you on a visual journey.
Taking you on a visual journey. Exactly. And that's why later she tries to seduce him, as Jesse was just talking about. So anyway, Kathy Baker, look her up. Should I name any other credits or?
No, I dropped out a couple, I think. Yeah. I think.
Well, she's also in 13 Going on 30, which you had just talked about for 5 seconds.
Well, she is.
Not 13 or 30 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah, and she is just, she's glorious. She's absolutely glorious. The next person we're going to talk about is, it feels repetitive only because each person on our list, genuinely, I could talk about just them because how much I really respect and love them. Toni Collette is, if you look up badass in the dictionary, there's just a gigantic picture of Toni Collette.
I think you have to look up Australian badass.
That's true. And then underneath, well, in that case, underneath it says, I am the original badass mate.
Okay.
She is another one. She's a chameleon. She can do anything. She sings. She actually has a band, but she's also sung in films. You know, she did United States of Tara, where she played a woman who was a schizophrenic, and on the show played four or five, depending on the episode, different characters.
And that's one of those shows where I'd assume you read the script of that and you're like, what? Who's going to do this? We got Toni Collette. Oh, that'll be good. That'll be good.
That's exactly it. Is you look at that and you go, all right, who the hell could pull? Oh, Toni Collette. Because Toni Collette is a genius. And she's also in another one of my favorite films, which is Connie and Carla.
And oh, don't know it.
That was the second film that Nia Vardalos wrote and directed.
Oh.
Obviously, Nia Vardalos, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, everyone knows that one. But not as many people know Connie and Carla. And Connie and Carla is delightful and funny, but also poignant. And it's one of my favorite, one of my dad's favorite too. We love that movie. And she is just, she's so good in it. She's just so good in it.
Connie and Carla.
Yeah, Connie and Carla.
All right.
So at the same time, she's been in Muriel's Wedding, The Sixth Sense, Shaft, About a Boy, The Hours, In Her Shoes, Little Miss Sunshine, Marion Max, which you and my dad spoke about, Hitchcock, The Way, Way Back, Enough Said, which is one of my dad's other favorite films as of late, which was James Gandolfini's last film.
Yes.
And she does a voice in Box Trolls.
Yes, we saw her voice acting, or we talked about her voice acting in Marion Max, as you just mentioned. So more of that brilliant voice acting in the Box Trolls. But yeah, enough said. Nicole Hall of Center, great film. And yeah, that's Toni Collette in a nutshell. Help, I'm Toni Collette in a nutshell. All right, I don't know why I decided I was going to do that. But
you
I did.
There, you did it.
By the way, and when Jesse says Shaft, she does not mean the original Shaft with Richard Roundtree. She means the remake of Shaft with Samuel Jackson and Jeffrey Wright.
Forgive me, Baron. Forgive me.
Which, by the way, Jeffrey Wright is one of my favorite actors, and he is a perfect person for this list as well.
Jeffrey Wright.
If loving him means being right, I want to be right. Nope, that doesn't make any sense.
No, I'm going to go with you on that one.
Now, if
you don't love him, then something is actually wrong with you.
On a personal note, this is why I came into the movie Selma with a lot of baggage. Because Jeffrey Wright did a HBO movie called Boycott, in which he played Martin Luther King Jr. So I was unfairly comparing David Oyelowo's performance to Jeffrey Wright's performance. It's an unfair comparison, And I had to really work on it, work really hard to not think about Jeffrey Wright in that role, especially because Carmen Ejogo is in both of those movies. She plays Coretta Scott King in both those movies. That's a sad note. But Jeffrey Wright has done so much.
Everything ever?
Just mostly everything ever. So, you know, Jeffrey Wright, look him up again. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is Basquiat. Which, that is a monstrous movie. But look, like we could go on and on about Jeffrey Wright. I just wanted to bring him up before we went out to another break.
Now, but the thing is, you are leaving out a few of the things that young folks, well, younger folks would just die over because it's Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright works a lot, and he's been in the last couple of James Bond movies, Casino Royale, Quantum of Leap, Skyfall. I'm not sure if he was in Skyfall, but he was definitely in Casino Royale and Quantum of Leap. Quantum of Leap, the Quantum of Leap, I always called that movie to myself. The Quantum of Solace, I mean to say. Source Code, and of course, the Hunger Game movies.
Yep.
Boardwalk Empire, you may remember him from that. But it looks like he's also done voices on Robot Chicken.
Yep.
Which is insane to me. Jeffrey Wright, came out of the theater, brilliant actor. We're going to take a break. And we'll be white black after this. It's here. Spontanea Nation. Paul F. Tompkins' brand new magical, mysterious, and musical show on Earwolf. The show is completely improvised, from monologue to interview to long-form sketch to music. Join Paul, his special guests, and his incredibly talented friends from the world of improv for an hour of comedy that none of them ever see coming. Mondays on Earwolf. Tune in. Spontanea Nation. Guess who's back? Back again. All right, it's me and Jesse Malton. That's who's back.
What's great about you doing that is that if you did that with my dad, he would not know that you were referencing Slim Shady. But now I can teach him.
Yes, he'll be like, who is that? Oh, yes, the Eminem guy.
Yes.
He's nuts and chocolate.
That fellow who was in 8 Mile. Yes, I do recall him.
Which is a good movie. It is a good movie.
It's a good movie. So now the two... The two gentlemen, when I was thinking about this particular category that I had thrown at Baron, I threw it gently, didn't want to hurt him. But the first two actors that came to mind, because again, at home, they're folks we talk about a lot, Billy Crudup and Aaron Eckhart. Why? Because again, chameleons, in both cases, all you have to do with them 90% of the time is add and remove hair. When one of them,
Mr. Potato Head,
or long hair, suddenly they're completely different. I say that so Billy Crudup is in Almost Famous as a rocker, and he's got shaggy hair and a mustache and the whole thing. Aaron Eckhart is in Aaron Brockovich, where he plays her lover, and again he's got like kind of long hair and the mustache, so they look completely different. When you then see Billy Crudup in Inventing the Abbotts, where Kathy Baker plays his mother, or Watchmen, where he is giant and blue.
He's a giant, glowing, bald, blue thing.
Yep, that's the thing that he is. And Aaron Eckhart in Thank You for Smoking, which honestly, I think it's hands down one of the best movies I've ever seen, Thank You for Smoking. I think it's incredible. And in particular, I think he's incredible.
I absolutely agree with you.
Because to be able to make other, and it's an obvious statement, but it's true. To be able to make other people believe you, you have to believe you. And, you know, so if he went into this saying, well, I don't get it though. Smoking's bad. We all know smoking's bad. Instead, he takes on this role and he finds a way to even make you, the viewer, go, oh, that actually kind of makes sense.
I do want to smoke. Yeah, maybe I do want to.
You know what?
Light up.
He's right. I should smoke more cigarettes. It's incredible to me. And he's incredible to me because any person who can have monologues the way that he does in this film, but just in general, where you're glued to him, you cannot look away from him. You know, that's something.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the first movie that I ever really saw him in, that I paid it. That's where I started paying attention to him. I saw an advanced screening of that movie and I was like, who the hell is this guy? Like, I walked out of there being like, that was an incredible movie. That actor just, I've never heard of that dude, and he just nailed it to the wall. Yep. And everyone's like, Baron, shut up. Let's go get some beers. I'm like, no, I have to stand here outside of this movie theater and talk about this out loud to no one for a little bit longer. All right, you guys go. I'll catch up with you. Who was that masked man?
Who was that guy? And again, and Billy Crudup, what's amazing with him, also a guy who works on Broadway a bit, he doesn't like the limelight. So you don't see him, you know, on chat shows and things like that. He maintains, you know, he maintains a lot of sort of his personal life, keeps it personal.
A lot of distance from the media.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about that is that in truth, it does help. It does help when you're watching someone who is transforming, because you're not thinking, oh, that's the guy who last week got into a fight with someone and TMZ recorded it. You know, when you're looking and all you're thinking is, yes, you are this person, whatever it may be. Hell, he's in the movie The Watch, which is not a great movie, not terrible, but not great. And he plays the creepiest. He plays a neighbor who is trying to get Ben Stiller to partake in some less than appropriate activities.
A neighborhood gathering, we'll say.
Yes. Yeah. A gathering of people together to really just become one. You will.
That's a good way to put it. But he makes it work. But you don't recognize, like, oh, that's the same guy from Big Fish. It's like, it's a different person.
It's a completely different person. And the idea, again, the idea that he would take that role, the idea that this, you know, this guy who can play really serious and he has just rave reviews from the stage, the guy who can do all that suddenly shows up in this movie essentially hitting on Ben Stiller. It's now that is some range.
And if you, and Billy Crudup also, it's no longer true, but for a few years had one of the most recognizable voices that you could hear, because he's got this, I want to say he's got a naturally sarcastic tenor voice with some bass tones to it. That's the most backwards way of saying what I'm trying to say. But
I was gonna say that's like Nerd of the Jungle. That's impressive.
Nerd of the, no, thanks, I think.
Well, no, because what I'm singing in my head is nerd, nerd, nerd of the jungle. That's why I said it.
Hey,
I'm sorry.
Watch out for that tree. was that you laughing right there?
Do you wanna know why my dad is trying to get better faster?
Why is that?
Because of this.
He's like, they're going on the tangents. They should be talking about Billy. What's going on with my pop, my other child? My other child.
I have no siblings except this podcast.
My child is ruining my child. I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my boy. All right, so there will be blood. Now, Billy Crudup.
Daddy, I love you.
Well, the point is that he did the voiceover in the Visa commercials.
Yes.
For years and years. And you could do that, or you could do it this way. I can't even – that's my impersonation of his voice. And then, of course, if you flew Virgin America, they also hired him to do the voiceover for their animated Fasten Your Seatbelts video, because they're like, I like that. Richard Branson was like, I like that sarcasm. That's what Americans do really well. Let's get that Crudup character to do this. And he crewed it up.
I was really hoping that was what you were going to say, and then you did. So then I did.
All right. Back to Aaron Eckhart real quick. The Dark Knight, people.
Yeah.
Obviously, you guys know it, but does your mom know? So he was in that, and I first started one of my favorite movies, and it's one of my favorite movies because it's a horrible, horrible movie, is The Black Dahlia. Oh, and yeah. it is a over-the-top opera that makes no sense that I saw in the movie theaters thinking maybe it'll be good, it'll be interesting because Aaron Eckhart's in it. And it was not. And I laughed out loud, as did people in the theater. So it became, this is not good, to this is silly, to now I'm having a good time because this is so bad. So I recommend you all have that experience with The Black Dahlia. Anyway.
Find some strangers, sit down next to each other, and have a giggle.
Have a giggle. Now, the last actor we're going to talk about.
Yes.
Has done a lot. You had mentioned The Watch, which he is not in. But it made me think of that movie he did a couple of years ago with Jake Gyllenhaal called End of Watch.
Yep.
And we're talking about a man named Michael Peña.
Yep.
You probably know who he is. He's less of a recognizable name than Billy Crudup and Aaron Eckhart. But this is a man that if you look him up, you'll be like, if you Google him right now, you'll be like, that guy's in everything.
Just to give you some idea, he's going to be in Ant-Man, which will be coming to us soon. But he's in Fury, American Hustle, Babel, Million Dollar Baby, Crash, the United States of Leland, which is a great indie. And then I also have Gone in 60 Seconds because let's face it, as I've made clear, Nicolas Cage can do no wrong in my eyes.
Okay. All right. If you say so.
Careful, Baron. I love that man.
As well as The Lincoln Lawyer. Everything Must Go. And then there was a movie that I auditioned for a long time ago because I was told that it was going to be Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock and Eddie Murphy were going to be in it. I was like, what? That's crazy. Then Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle dropped out and it became Ben Stiller and Eddie Murphy. And then Brett Ratner signed on to direct, and that movie was called Tower Heist.
Nice.
So the role that Michael Peña plays in that role, guess who almost got it? Baron Vaughn over here.
Baron.
I was probably in a pool of 50 people, but in this industry, that's a very small pool. But it went to Michael Peña, and that's okay by me because that man is good, and he's funny, too. That's the other thing. This man can do drama. As he does over and over and over again. And then he can be funny as he does over and over again. Tower Heist, which is not an amazing movie, but there's some great moments in it. And he has a lot of funny stuff in it.
Moments in it. And that's another one. I saw that with my dad. And it was one where we walked out and we were both sort of, it's like when you know your parents say, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. That's how I feel sometimes when my dad and I are walking out of movies is we go, we're not mad. We're just disappointed. I expected better from you.
And that's what you felt about Tower Heist?
Yeah, because it does have a really great cast of people, and it's got Gabourey Sidibe and just all sorts of really funny people.
Yeah.
And it's not terrible. It's just not a great movie.
It just in some ways just doesn't work in the end. Yeah. Even though it's an enjoyable experience, and again, all those people are funny, and you get to see them be funny. I want to mention another movie that Michael Peña did in 2014, Cesar Chavez. Now, some of you may know who this man is. Some of you may not know who this man is.
If you live in California,
you know who this man is.
Don't know. I'm fairly certain you're under a rock.
Definitely. He was a civil rights leader. And this movie was made was directed by Diego Luna, who some of you might recognize as an actor. He was in Y Tu Mamá También, that actor.
Y Tu Mamá También, which was one of the first that was a big one because him and Gael García Bernal that was their first time.
Yeah,
out.
They were doing they were two best friends, but that's a whole different movie that you should also watch.
Yeah.
But that actor directed a movie about Cesar Chavez and Michael Peña plays him. It's pretty impressive, I'll say. So check that out. The movie has gotten mixed reviews, but I'm a big Michael Peña fan, so I very much enjoyed it. Anybody else we want to mention? Those are the people that we're featuring today.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there's the thing is, again, if you're a movie buff, and for me, for example, I mean, I'll just sort of go through, see what's on TV. And depending on if I just happen to see that there's an actor in it that I like, I'll just TiVo the movie, give it a shot. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's terrible. I never know. But I just sort of figure, well, if they're in it, at least I know it's going to be interesting. Corey Stoll is one of those people.
Yeah, Corey Stoll, you might. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Wouldn't know. No, he's another one where if I showed you his face, you'd know him because he's done so much. But he's just a solid, always a good actor.
Well, he's about to be an Ant-Man as well.
Yes, he's going to be an Ant-Man coming up. William Fichtner, who is, I think he might actually be in every movie that's ever been made.
Yeah.
But it includes Armageddon, The Perfect Storm, Pearl Harbor, Black Hawk Down, Equilibrium, Crash, The Dark Knight.
Yes, but I like to think of him in Blades of Glory, which is that comedy that Will Ferrell and John Heder made about figure skating. And he is hilarious, hilarious in it. Continue.
No, he's just a very talented guy. Ben Foster.
Who I like to think is Robin Wright's boyfriend. What?
Fiance, duh.
Boyfriend is like, it just means the love is there.
Sure. Let's go with that. The thing about Ben Foster is I started watching him when I was probably about 10, and he is only a little bit older than I am. And he was on a show called Flash Forward, and I fell in love with him. He's in a movie called Get Over It, which a lot of people do not know. It's him and Kirsten Dunst and Mila Kunis and Sisko. Oh, that's right. Sisko, Colin Hanks, Martin Short. Shane West. How could I forget Shane West? It's a terrible, wonderful movie. I really do actually. I love this film. It's Martin Short is a drama teacher who has decided to turn A Midsummer Night's Dream into a musical. And that's the film. You should see it. It will make you smile.
Beautiful.
But then he's in things like Bang Bang, You're Dead and Liberty Heights, which some people saw. Adrian Brody's in that. He's in The Punisher. He's an Alpha Dog. He's in X-Men. He's another actor where he can do anything. And having watched him since I was so young and having a crush on him as this, you know, cute blonde kid, and now seeing him and having seen him make these really difficult movies, it's a big change, but he's another one where he's just always good.
Okay. I'm with you.
All right. And you, Mr. Vaughn, is there anyone else that you would like to share?
Oh, yes. Well, there's a couple other people that we put on this list, like Beth Grant and Lucy Punch.
Awesome.
Melanie Diaz. But I also wanted to bring up a woman who I love very much named CCH Pounder. CCH Pounder. Now, this is a woman who has been working forever, and you have seen her in so many things. I mean, I'm just looking at her credits here. Avatar, The Shield, Face Off, and Orphan are the things that she's known for some reason, which I disagree with. But she's currently on NCIS New Orleans, which is the newest of the NCISs. She's a powerhouse black woman who a friend of mine who is a very successful actor once said to me, in a perfect world, CCH would be so famous and impossibly famous. But I want to point out a particular movie that is, I want to say, quintessential in viewing if you're going to talk about CCH Pounder. And that movie is called Baghdad Cafe. And it is from a very long time ago, 1987. And it is a very, very interesting movie. I'm just going to read you the description that it says right here. A lonely German woman ends up in the most desolate motel on earth and decides to make it brighter. What? I'll leave it at that. CCH Pounder's in it. Jack Palance is in it. So check that out. It is a beautiful film.
I was only 1 year old at the time, but I will never forget seeing that film.
All right.
Boy, one year old Jesse was all about it.
I can't even remember what I saw at one.
I'm going to throw out one more name, and I'm actually I'm tattling on you, but you have mentioned that you are friends with a lovely woman who is now getting all kinds of attention because of Orange is the New Black.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. You're talking about Uzo Aduba.
That is who I am talking about. Because I have been in England and have had some downtime as I'm going around, you may have heard earlier in when I've done these episodes. Basically, I come over to England, to the UK in general. My boyfriend tours with different shows. He is the head of lighting. So I go to all sorts of little cities with him. And because of that, when the new season of Orange is the New Black came out, I watched it and then thought, you know, I think I'm just going to watch all three again because this third season didn't hit me the way that I wanted it to. And watching them again and watching her in particular, that woman is electric. She really, really is. And you know, she, in the first season especially, she plays a character that's meant to be, you know, crazy.
Right.
Wacky and crazy and all of this. And then as the season...
Well, but to write her off is crazy. Like, oh, she's crazy. She's just a crazy person.
Well, that's... And her nickname is Crazy Eyes. But as the show goes on and as you get into season two and to season three, what you see is the word I keep using, depth. She takes a character who could so easily just be a clown, essentially. You know, she could. She could just be a clown and make everything silly and ridiculous and, oh, she's just crazy. And instead, she mesmerizes you.
Yeah.
And considering that this is, you know, an ensemble show with all these different people to watch and genuinely all of them good, at the end of rewatching all the way through to the third season, all I could think was, this woman is going to go on and I hope people are going to see how incredible she is and that we'll just get more and more of her.
Yeah, I mean, people like Uzo are inevitable. And we lived on the same floor freshman year of college at Boston University and have been friends ever since. And so watching her get on this show, and, you know, she has been someone who's worked hard. She worked really hard in theater in New York. She has been on Broadway, a couple of times. And I've, you know, we've been friends and been talking about acting and all this stuff for so long. So it's like, you know, she was an opera major. A lot of people don't know.
I was going to say, you had said the other day that she was an opera major.
She was an opera major at Boston University on a track scholarship. Okay. So she doesn't mess around, people. And she is someone, obviously, to watch. And little by little, she's becoming more and more of a household name. But I can see her, you know, and I know that she's been doing a couple movies on her hiatus from second to third season of Orange is New Black and is working on stuff right now. So we're going to start seeing her out there a lot more. And she, you know, will be a household name if she isn't already. And she might be to you, but again... Does your mother know?
Yeah.
Who Uzo Aduba is? And if she don't know, you better ask somebody. Well, that's...
If you don't know, take a moment and look at this woman because she's going to blow your mind.
Going to blow your mind, and I see great things happening for her in the future, as we all will. Well, that's it for this episode of Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn. I've been Baron Vaughn. Jesse, You've been Jesse Malton.
I've actually, here's my secret. I'm Leonard.
Uh-oh. And then you like...
There is no Leonard. We are a collective.
Well, I mean, I was in the room with both of you at the same time, so I have to refute that. Sorry.
Well, man, you know what? I thought we were friends. Now I'm just hurt.
Uh-oh.
Now I'm just hurt.
Well, I'm high-fiving you across the ocean.
Thank you all so much for your tweets and your messages to my dad. I make sure that he sees and reads everything, and he really appreciates everybody being so kind. As I say, fingers crossed, we're getting towards the end of this damn infection, and he will be returning to you soon. And thank you for letting me fill in and not throwing things at me. I realize you can't actually throw things at me, but you know, maybe you made a voodoo doll or whatever, but it has been a pleasure speaking with you.
Okay. Thanks, Jesse. Bye.
Pop.
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 Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.